Hey, thanks for listening to Replayable, a podcast where we talk about current media within a game concept. Beware, there will be spoilers ahead. The one thing I wanted to get your opinions on, because you're playing the Street Fighter 6 demo.
Yeah.
And what were your, what was your experience with Street Fighter 6?
Oh, generally positive. I can say that it was one of the most enjoyable fighting games I've gotten to play in the last little bit. The netcode is definitely super strong. It definitely makes things playable. Can't definitively say, oh, it's the best netcode I've ever played on, and because I don't know how long moves are. Like, I don't know frame data, I don't know none of that stuff, so I don't know. But in terms of feel, like, it felt great. It wasn't much, like, rollbacking or general hitching as playing online. It just felt really smooth. The sheer option, like, hey, is this match not going so well? Both people can just hold select, and then it just forfeits the match. No one takes a penalty, and they're just like, hey, just go find another match.
Yeah.
That's great.
That, I think it's especially when initially you are, because it's just the beta, it's not really competitive, so I assume on that front, you're not forced to work your way to like diamond rankings or something this.
You can play, you're able to play ranked during the beta. That's what I did on my last day, actually.
Oh, wow.
But you weren't forced to play ranked. You could play ranked, and some of it got pretty sweaty.
Oh, yeah?
But I really enjoyed like the fact that it's back to like Street Fighter 4, where your character, it's like specific to your character is what has your rank. So if you liked grinding out different sub-characters, you wouldn't get thrown back into the shark pit like Street Fighter V, where you're like, oh, I'm Diamond? Okay, I want to learn a new sub-character. I guess I have to fight Diamond people. So, no, you're a character. Go back to the beginning with it. Might be a love-hate for some people, but I really enjoyed that because it was just like, oh, I got my Ryu to a certain level. Oh, now I want to go play this other character and see how far I can get them.
Okay. Was Street Fighter V different, where it's like when you're playing a character, it didn't really matter, like, you'd be in Diamond League and you could play, like, new character.
Your account or whatever, or your that character, it wasn't, like, specific to that character. Your rank wasn't tied to just that character. It was just, like, overall your account. So, no matter who you played, it was just, you're always going to play that. Yeah, you're going to play that specifically.
Oh, okay. It's cool. I guess it makes it interesting when, you actually have to level up each character to a certain, like a diamond tier or something like that, where it's like you're not starting out at diamond tier, where it can be a little bit discouraging, where you're getting like plowed by whoever who's already like a diamond, and it's like they've been playing that character for however many years or whatnot. Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense for sure.
They did have like promotional matches, or what do they do? The most ranked thing, like placement. You still have to play your 10 placements on your characters whenever you started like a new one. And over time, you'll eventually learn the mechanics enough so that you won't just get sent straight into bronze and pub stomp someone. They'll probably put you closer to what your actual skill level is. So if you somehow ended diamond on one character, it should be pretty easy to maybe land between gold and plat. That's like my assumption. Unless you're playing like probably something weird. Like I get a picture like someone just never playing Dalsim before. Going, I don't know what I'm doing. He's kind of low.
It's like I'm playing a dime level and this guy's clapping me. I honestly hate that. That's never fun. But it is, it does open that aspect up, which is like it's funny seeing games where they were to where they are now. The interesting mechanic over the past, I don't know, I want to say, I guess, decade or so, or maybe less, or maybe more, since I noticed it a lot since Destiny came out, but grinding, like the hours you put in and grinding up to get to that level, I guess in a way it makes more sense because it's like it's almost like you have to do it with each character, whereas like some games it's like grinding is a feature that a player has to go through to level up to a degree so that they're competitive or that they have a certain amount of resources or like weapon perks that make them more, I guess, damaging when they're coming across like higher level characters. Yeah, I don't know. I'm pro a little bit, but a little bit against as well. I think when it's too much of a grind to do something, I don't know. For me, I'm just like, I got
things to do.
Yeah.
We got to remember, like, at the end of the day, a lot of these games especially the ones that you like mentioned, are games as a service, so they need your time. And a lot of them tend to either be free or work off of that, either the Battle Pass model or some other freemium model. The most that they'd be like is, hey, we need a little bit of money from you, or we need all your time to ensure that you're not playing something else.
Yeah, I found that because, not to dive too deep on that aspect, but Destiny, it's like you bought it outright, but still it's like even though the name of the podcast is replayability, I really think that it almost makes a game not as replayable when you're associating this grind will be part of the game mechanics for players to get better. And I'm like, if the game intuitively doesn't have a interesting metric to hold people and make it interesting, I find that it just turns me off. Or if there's a paywall that's put in between you and learning some moves. And I think that's why I like fighting games, because when you're playing them, it is, are you using the whole character because you have access to the whole character? Whereas I remember I was playing, I really liked this style, but it was called 3-on-3 Freestyle. It was this basketball game. Yeah. And the only thing is you would play and play and play and like literally just play for so long, and then you'd unlock a new move and you keep playing, and it's, or you could give $20 and then it would level up so you can get this move, and then another $20 to get another move. And then it was really much, it just felt what it was.
Like the pay to win. But that just feels so indicative of the time period of the early, I won't say early, but maybe it's like mid to late 2000s gaming. Because I remember all the free to play game in that kind of model of, hey, do you want to play this Counter-Strike-like game? Okay, you either have these basic guns or you use the in-game currency that you need to purchase to get these better guns.
But did it really affect the match where it was like, oh, that's terrible? Yeah, no, I'd like, be out so fast. I'm sorry.
I was young, naive, and hooked.
It's because gaming, it's such an interesting medium. And I think it's like when you have that competitive nature to really want to improve. And I think that is almost core to humans to a degree when it comes to certain things that they're interested in. You always want to have a level of progression. But I think, I think when it is, I don't want to say a false level of progression, but when I feel like it's a level of progression that is designed grind, I find that's where I feel like we're beyond that. Yeah. Turn my phone off here. But this is replayable, and I am talking to Chris Twim. Correct if I'm wrong if I mispronounced your name. It's Twim. Pardon me. Wow, that's totally.
No, a bunch of people get my last name wrong, so don't feel bad.
Yeah.
Now you just got to intentionally just start saying them all wrong.
Yeah, I don't, but that's essentially what happens. So I know someone's just going to tune in and be like, this guy just doesn't even. I apologize. But again, this is replayable, and this week we're reviewing a movie called Volcano High, and the Korean name, it is a Korean movie, Kwasai Ango. Again, I'm probably butchering it, but that is the Korean name. The director is Tae Gin Kim, and it was a movie that was released in 2001, which has a very definitive, I would say, cult classic kind of vibe. The synopsis, violence in Korean high schools, especially inside the Wasago Volcano High School, you won't be able to escape the violence. It was definitely indicative of a time period. I think there's maybe two types. There's one, obviously, English dub. There's the Korean kind of a language. And then there is an MTV version where they have the current kind of hip-hop, I guess, rappers of the time taking on the roles of some of the characters, which I watched and I thought actually was brilliant. I thought it was interesting. Just some of the character, interjections, and almost like hearing somebody's voice and you're curious to see who that person is. And you find out that it's like Little John and you're just like, God damn, I didn't even know. It was pretty funny. It was pretty funny for sure. But it stars Ang Hyuk, Shin Min A, Soo Ru Kim, Kwon Sang Woo. It is very Korean cast, but those are the main stars. But I enjoyed it. Made me actually think of, it did bring you back to the aspect of games in and around that time. I wonder if some parts were influenced maybe or maybe not. But I know in 97, Rival Schools was a Capcom game that was released for, I think, PlayStation 1. And it I remember one of the main characters, I think his name is Daigo, actually. He looked very reminiscent of the costumes or the, I would say, clothing, the attire of some of the...
Students?
Yeah, some of the students. Yeah. I don't, again, I'm just, it's almost like you can sometimes look at the historical point of when it came out and maybe things in and around it maybe influenced it, maybe not. But yeah, just like very quirky, interesting anime-esque story, very definitive characters that were in it. And then the tension points and the combat style, it made me think of, what is it now? I remember back in the day, they used to have these movies, and I think one movie was like Dolomite, where it was like jump cuts, and there's this very like rough framed like story. But I think the interest was the characters and the action that was taking place. It gave me a little bit of those vibes, not in regards to obviously the martial arts, but just I think they really tried to push each character was very different than the next and tried to set up the power struggle that takes place and how things went about. But yeah, I guess what was your experience with the flick? What did you get the sense of?
So Volcano High for me is definitely like an old throwback. It was something that I had watched when I was really young. And I hadn't thought much about it until our last conversation about choosing a film, something to base the podcast on. So me going back to rewatching it, it was definitely a fun trip. I definitely enjoyed I think they described it as Kung Fu, like the fake martial arts. So I really enjoyed it. I don't think the story has aged very well. I had to go through it about twice just to be like, did I miss something? It seems weird how they jump to certain places. It was just like, oh, this scene cuts into this. But then after watching like the original Korean version, I was like, oh, this MTV version's like heavily edited. Heavily rearranged.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's lots of scenes where specifically the one that I can remember is where he's like daydreaming about the girl. I don't know if you remember that when he's in class. That's not actually daydreaming about it. It's supposed to be the dude that was trying to get him into the club. I think the rugby guy, that's supposed to be his sister, and he's supposed to use his sister to try and get him. So there's like little things like that where like they cut up and they tried to switch the story around. Like the main goal of it wasn't like to fight for like just the substitutes and stuff. Even like the important thing about like T subplot, like the T thing was just, it was supposed to be something bigger. It was supposed to be like, they were supposed to talk about the scroll and it having the power and all that, and that being like the main thing. But in this MTV version, it was a lot different.
Yeah, I found that when I first was watching it initially, it was a sort of an English dub, but then it stalled. And then I was like, okay, I got to find, because I remember actually you mentioned the MTV version and I was like, I got to find that one. He seems to be pretty into that, so I wanted to make sure that I framed up. But I'm glad that actually that things maybe didn't quite align exactly. Going to be like, it's almost like I look at it like a popcorn flick to a degree, but there's some interesting concepts that are within it. But yeah, the framing in some parts, I got a little bit lost, and I think that was one of the parts actually that you mentioned, where it was like a daydreaming. And then there was another part where it went from he meets this girl, or this girl fends off this guy, and then, yeah, her rugby boyfriend, because the principal gets poisoned by this tea that was given by the, I think, maybe main antagonist.
Blackie, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you are correct with that. There are some weird jump-offs, like weird cut-offs, but like at the end of the day, to me, that at least the MTV version is definitely a popcorn kind of film where don't take things seriously. You just eat with your eyes. Just look at the fun visual thing.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And I definitely did get that kind of sentiment. It was a thing because, yeah, when they first, even the antagonist or protagonist, or I'm not even sure if you'd call him an antagonist, but the guy who was like the bull or something like this. The dark ox. Yeah. When they first came across each other. No, it wasn't the dark ox. It was I think it was his rugby brother. They met in that hallway, and then they had that chi blast and the hallway like erupted, and all the sort of doors, the glass and the wood splintered off into the hallway and stuff like that. But yeah, it reminded me of almost like anime-esque intro where you have the character, and then it's he's in this place. What is this place? What are the people like? And then you run across one of the main people that is going to push the protagonist through the story, maybe challenge him to change or what have you. And their initial kind of like showdown was very memorable and epic, but he never really showed those abilities until, or they were never ramped up until much later on, or the climax end of the story. But yeah, it's definitely, as you said, you eat with your eyes. There's a lot of visuals. I found like with your ears as well in the MTV version, just like the voice acting by the certain artists at the time, it definitely felt, it brought me back to the MTV kind of, yeah, it's like when anime really began to take off in North America. I remember watching like Ninja Scroll back in the day. It just brought back all these other memories because it just felt of that era. Yeah, which is interesting. But yeah, in Volcano High, if you could pick one narrative, what's the most important one do you feel that drives the story?
That's a tough one, but I always think of it as, what is your reason to fight? When I looked at Volcano High, the main character, he was really reluctant. He didn't even want to fight. He just wanted to, quote-unquote, live a normal life. He wanted to fit in, even though he was put in a school full of turmoil and delinquent. But I think just specifically, what is your reason to fight? Finding a reason to fight. And then how does it progress from there? That main core of what is your reason to fight, I believe, would be like the strongest one for me.
So I guess like when I was watching it, I guess his obviously reason to fight, he's in a new kind of like high school. There's that, what is it now? When you're in a place that you have to show people who you are, like you're not somebody to kind of mess with. But then there's also that initial like love interest, but then also I thought a little subtext kind of narrative was his backstory. As the story progresses, the teachers all get fired or quit or afraid or something like this, and the substitutes come in, and the substitutes know him based off his history. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So it's like he is trying to outrun his past, but his past keeps catching up with him until it's like he faces his past. So it's almost like this context of, yeah, one part, there's that love interest, which is very, I feel, Western-esque in regards to carrying a movie through from start to finish. But then there's also this introduced idea of history with the main character and how he has to essentially stand his ground and learn from, I guess, his past and almost defeat what keeps catching up to him. So I thought that was an interesting take as well. Yeah. So in Volcano High, what features technology-wise that took place in the film that could be used in an interesting game kind of concept?
See, this one's a weird
one. Or mechanic. Or was it something that, let's say, that stood out to you initially that, oh, that's cool. That's how I look at it. Certain ideas, like when I was watching Inception, you could go with that machine that they use to essentially create the landscape of that dream world where they all dove into. It's like I'm thinking of, or even maybe I think the avenue of even the destructible kind of like environments within the kind of show. I'm just thinking of something like, it doesn't have to be the main pillar, but it would be something that kind of stuck out that you think would be an interesting maybe exploration or added, yeah, I guess, element that would be interesting if it was put into a game.
I think that's funny you mentioned the word because those are like the main thing that I saw VFX wise to be the most interesting. So anything from the background, like the scenes where he was in the showers or even specifically like fighting in the rain, controlling it with, I don't remember what they called in the movie, if it's even explained, the kind of energy that he uses. That kind of thing would be really interesting. Like, using, if this is going to be a fighting game, using special moves, how do they react with the environment? Do people have kits that actually interact and change the environment? Will there things that'll be breakable? Will there be, like, that, will weather effects be important? That's the kind of stuff that is, like, in my brain now.
I find it, yeah, when you bring that up, I think the, as you said, like the elements that were within it, I mean, there was that water element. It felt like there was like that air element.
Yeah.
And then the dark, I'm sorry, I'm butchering it, the dark bull or the, what is the one, the dark ox, I think.
Yeah. He just kept calling himself the dark ox.
Yeah. It's like very third person, very like egocentric kind of a personality. But his was like, I would say, much more of power, like just raw strength. And I think those elements, let's say if you know how games are somewhat like a paper, rock, scissors at times, but you don't have one that completely dominates the other. So it would be interesting to see how each element, let's say if there was like a water environment that you're fighting in, how the air element would be augmented. And then let's say if there was like an air environment that you're fighting in, how the strength or power element would be augmented within that environment, and how that exchange would go down. Or even other kind of like fighting games, and Marvel versus Capcom, where it's like you're swapping out certain characters because they have specific kits to fight within, to fight your opponent that might have a better chance of balancing or butting up against them. So it just makes me think if there's a balancing act taking place between all of these elements that are introduced in it, which would be an interesting kind of like mechanic if it was put into a game or used in a game somehow.
The way I'm thinking of is how would you balance? You would have to limit, I guess, the amount of or the types of elements that you can use so that you could create that rock, paper, scissors dynamic. But then if you tie them, like I could see how it could also be a balancing nightmare. If you tie certain characters to these elements and you're just like, well, I can't play. What if I can't play this cool character because I already have someone like that? So maybe it won't be the be all end all, but I could see how that would be like, you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, it's also, as you say, I think you brought up earlier with like kits. So it could be like, let's say you have this cool character, but then it would be like maybe unlocking his, maybe each character has a wind, a water, and a power kit. But it's like the one you invest in more begins to unlock like the unique kind of style in which that character fights in. But it's like you still have to balance maybe that out. I don't know why I'm thinking of it, but I remember back in the day, there was this game called WrestleMania 2000. It was an N64 wrestling game. But you'd go through and pick all your move kind of sets, and you'd come up with this unique character. And it makes me, in a way, think of that, where let's say you're fighting, and then even though in fighting games initially you have access to all of your character's moves, but maybe you
locking them in certain grooves. I'm definitely thinking that, because I was just like, that would make it for a fun dynamic then, because like then you could potentially have a smaller cat with just more variants in between them, almost very similar to the fighting games like Melty Blood, where there's different moons. So they use different, I think three different ones, like Half Moon Crescent. Each moon makes their character play differently, and they get different system mechanics from that. Some of them get extra airtime and double jumps. Some people get what they call the reverse beat. So normally in fighting games, or at least anime-like fighting games, you typically go A, B, C, or light, medium, heavy. But in certain moons, they get to reverse beat, so they could go heavy, medium, light, or anything into anything, essentially.
I remember I was like, heavily into Street Fighter when I was younger, and Street Fighter Alpha 3 for PlayStation 1 actually introduced something where you could have different perks, and there was that perk where you could build like your own character, and you could have, normally you could have, yeah, it would go light, medium, hard, but then when you introduced, I think it was called Auto Combo, where you could introduce where, let's say you jump in with a medium attack, so you get like that stagger when you hit a character, and if you're jumping in kind of meaty, like deep, then you'd go like light. You could go mix it up how you see fit. I'm just remembering with Charlie, because he had this massive back fist, so I'd jump in with like medium kick, and I'd land, and I'd go jab, short, forward, strong punch, fierce standing, which would be his back fist, and then you could cancel it into his standing, what is it now? I would say Sonic Boom Typhoon. So you'd get like, before there's no way that you could do exactly what you said, where, because you jump in and I think you'd initially you could only jump in, maybe get, if you jump in Fierce Punch, and you'd get like a jab, short, strong, fierce standing punch. Like, I think that's the max. And then I don't even think you could cancel that into a super.
Because there would be a chain at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you could only get certain chains. But with auto combo, it's like you could, yeah, put anything into anything. And it was wild, some of the really lengthy combos that you could pull off. And I like that kind of mechanic where it's almost like Capcom was like introducing you to ways to augment their game to make it a little bit more interesting. But yeah, I'm going to have to look up that game that you mentioned, Melty Blood. Is that what you, yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Might not want to look up the newest one because it does chain that kind of moon drive system. But like the older ones, you'll know them. They have the really long, funky names to them.
Or I'll try to find the dates. Okay, so what date for which game?
Melty Blood's like PlayStation 2 era, early 2000s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm really, it's funny. It's interesting to see what people were really into. I feel like for me, that was a little bit obscure.
Oh, I definitely think it was an obscure game. The only reason why I know of it was my buddies were really into fighting games and Evolution. It was just one of the times that it was a main game at Evo.
Oh,
had recordings, and they're like, sit down, watch this game. Like, oh, this is weird. I've never seen this before, but it looks fun.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that used to be like the sort of the buy-in. Does this look fun? Can I get into it? Yeah, that's... Is it... Do you know the developer? Are they like
French
Korean?
Bread. I believe they're Japanese.
Japanese, okay. French Bread, eh?
Yep.
That's interesting. I love the name too. Yeah, moving on to the next question. In a way, I guess maybe we... I don't know. We'll see what happens. But how would you... This is like a loose kind of like idea construct that we're coming up with. But how would you, in a fighting game, like how would you empower the player? What mechanics do you feel would be interesting mechanics maybe that you've seen or things that developers maybe would try to attempt?
There's like many things on my brain for this one. Mm-hmm. Sorry if this sounds like it's going to be like scattered.
Do it.
But definitely one way that I would empower my players would definitely be good networking, like in terms of infrastructure, having like good net code. That's definitely like one, like you want to be able to play someone around the, not around the world, but as far as you can get with having a relatively stable match. So that's definitely like one that's there. But in terms of like actual gameplay and all that, things that have been interesting have been, especially like with Project L coming on the horizon, is like the accessibility. Like, how do we make a fighting game more accessible for more people to play? So the idea of, I won't say dumbing down, but simplifying your control has me like considering, like, how can you lower the skill ceiling in terms of doing maybe special moves? Could you lower that but still keep something that is, what's the best way to describe it? Still
balanced?
Hardcore, that still has a high skill ceiling to it. So I think of games like Marvel vs. Capcom, Project L, and I'm trying to think, I'm like, what is a good balance? Having motion inputs or that simplified inputs? Those are definitely like ways that I would consider, at least for my players. If I were to choose, I wouldn't say, oh, we only have to do simple. My brain is probably like on the, probably keep both, but make sure there's no inherent advantage or disadvantage for playing on each, other than I guess not being able to do things that are like really cursed. Like, I can think of Street Fighter for the 3DS with Guile to be able to just walking flash kick.
Oh, that's broken. That's like AI hacky. This guy's too good. We're going to bring out the Japanese AI to take care of this fella.
No, that's maybe like a bit much.
That's frustrating for sure. Because that's definitely indicative of his name then. You're like, wait a minute. Because normally it's, you know the name Guile, it's to trick. And the thing that I find interesting with Guile, I'll keep this like small, but his moves are all opposite. So it's, oh, he's moving backwards. Oh, then he throws a sonic boom. Oh, he's crouched low. I can jump in. Oh, but he does a flash kick. His moves are always opposite of his nature when you're looking at him. But walking towards you flash kick, that is complete BS. That is not, that is like not fair at all. If he can, that's his only move.
So I definitely could see like how scary it could be if you don't like think about stuff like that. But aside from controls, I feel like the best way to empower my player would be to feel like they're strong, or at least give them that power fantasy that they're doing something that they couldn't do another game, or something that like is super spectacular. I'm trying to think of the games that like make me feel like that. Definitely is like the Rival Schools or like the Marvel vs. Capcom. They change like the damage. Oh, specifically, I think it's for Marvel and like Tatsunoko. Now I think about it, like one way that they empower their players and make them feel strong is instead of saying, oh, your damage is like 10, 20, they go like in the millions. Like, you did a million damage on a jab or something. So like little things like that, I just, that's part of what I would, that's where like my mindset's at. It's just like,
do you also
share that? Feel that they're strong and give them that power fantasy. Is that for Kachov? Sorry.
It's okay. I was also riffing off your idea. Would you also think of like Killer Instinct where you do like ultra combos and...
Like now this might just end up becoming a discussion of gushing about all like the fun things.
Let's do it.
But yeah, the ultra combos and just that nature of hitting like long freeform combos. That stuff always... It's cool to an extent. Like, there always has to be, like, a little bit of a limit, because it's not cool getting hit with a combo that just seemingly goes on forever. But there is something cool about finishing off someone or, like, doing a combo and it just going crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, you did 20, 30 hits, and the announcer's in it just, like, screaming his head off.
Yeah.
That seems like...
Yeah. I find, yeah, it is definitely you want to bring back the balance. I think it's also interesting. I mean, the fact that we're talking about fighting games, this might be a little bit of a divergence, but it's interesting when I was in fighting games, the metric was that if you were not good to a certain degree, that the game, how it was set up, wouldn't reward you for getting hit. And I remember, going to the arcade and just, you'd have to almost just find ways to improve. And I found like at certain times it was like difficult, especially when you had a very good player, because if you got behind or didn't change your playstyle or use the full character, I found you'd be more prone to lose because you weren't using all the elements that rounded out that character to balance your attack or defense against another character if they were using like the full kit of that character. Whereas I see Street Fighter, though it is very deep and you have some very skilled players playing it, there's definitely that, I would say, boomerang like effect where you
comeback mechanic.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're sugarcoating.
Yeah. Like, and I mean like
skating it, but yeah.
But it does create a different, and I think the one thing too is like the spectacle of a fight. It creates that. I remember when I was even watching like wrestling back in the day, you had like Hulk Hogan, he'd be getting beat up, or the Ultimate Warrior would be getting beaten up. And then all of a sudden he'd start like shaking his head. He'd shaken these shots off. And then all of a sudden he'd make this like big comeback. And I think there is something that's like, and when you do it in a certain context, it's very rewarding. And I remember even going to, I guess, somewhat recent Evo moment number 37, where it's like, you have these two high tier players playing it off against each other. And then this Justin Wong, I think he rolls out this level, the super with Chung Li, which is essentially just like a flurry of attacks, which happened very quickly. But then you have on the other side somebody who's literally played the game so much that they've been waiting for this exact moment. And there's no other way for him to actually win because he's pretty much almost defeated. But he's trying to do whatever he can.
He has to parry.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's like,
yeah.
And it's very rhythm based. If you miss one attack, it's like he has to parry, which also gives him perfect defense, but it also charges his super meter. And that was the thing where he parried this entire combo and then does this recoil comeback, which was essentially purely based off his level of understanding, practice, all of that work. Became such a crazy rewarding moment that it still goes down in infamy as one of the people who know fighting games, and especially at that time, it was such a crazy, oh my God. And it feels like they tried to package that to a degree in Capcom exclusively to try to make this comeback mechanic, which is in its own right, it does make matches more tense. I remember Guilty Gear back in the day actually had this one move where it was one hit, one kill, but you could actually counter it. But it was only if you were really aware that the move was coming out and it was going to land. And it was almost like if you're playing somebody who's really not good and you really don't want to play them, you'd launch this move even from like round one and you just kill them for both rounds. So you go back to the select screen and it's almost, oh my God, you completely defeated this person because they were really not good. And you just really didn't want to like maybe play them or that character. So it keeps that moment for them on your toes. But yeah, I think like when it goes right back to the character select screen, that can be a little bit like really aggressive. Oh my God. And especially like loading at the time, you're like, why would you even do that move? But it's interesting like how things evolve and change and whatnot. Yeah.
I'm just trying to unpack some of that. Because I do think of having comeback mechanics where they're tied to some sort of skill-based approach, whether it's the parry or something else, is it feels good if you're able to come back. Not having a comeback at least feels bad because of the fact when people steamroll you, it's bad. It feels like you never got to play. Like, I could picture many of times playing a Yun in Third Strike, and they build Ganagen, and then they touch you once.
Yeah.
You don't get to build meter when they're hitting you in Ganagen, but they're building another Ganagen.
Yeah.
As they're doing their combo, you're just like, it's gross. Just leading into the snowball.
Yeah.
But then also, like, the adverse is true, where Street Fighter V was, like, the big case of, wow, I played a round really sloppy, but if I have a good B trigger on my character, I could potentially steal a round in two combos or two bad reads. It's just, like, the opposite. Like, having really strong comeback mechanics are not great either.
Yeah, yeah. It is definitely reading your audience and almost like trying to introduce something that is... You always want to keep your audience happy, keep your audience on their toes. But it's just interesting in regards to how certain things change. Because I know that there's going to be like a... You don't want to be a gatekeeper of, oh, back in the day when I was playing, this is the way better way to do it. And I find it's almost, okay, it's been done. What else is new? It's almost like a yes and, but it's how do you keep players interested? How do you keep players engaged? And also as well with the advent of social, and we have, what is it now, Twitch, and we have YouTube streaming and all these gamers that are playing now, it creates a much more interesting product, I would say, when you're including viewers that might not be as top tier, or they might eventually become as knowledgeable of the game. But I think when you can have, oh, this guy's totally getting slaughtered and this person is completely making a comeback, it does bring back that power fantasy of I'm never out of the fight. It's almost like boxing where, you know, this, it's like the 12th round and this guy, the one guy could just dance around the ring and not engage and then just takes one funny punch and all of a sudden the fight is over, completely swung in a different direction. And it's that spectacle of, oh my gosh, like how did this happen? Why would he do that? And it's just, it's interesting, I guess, how it's set up. I think it's almost like it comes down to preference, but I think one can accept when, as you were mentioning with the Jin, having balanced characters, I think is the, I would say, greater good for players. When you have characters that are completely broken, and it is very difficult to find counters once you're in a situation because they're abusing, let's say, things that are very, I guess, unbalanced, maybe things that need patches to take the top AAA tier off something that almost like trunks another player's character set becomes
I know we're like
difficult.
Totally going away from like the main topic, but I mean, jump on that, like about the patches. Are you for or against patches?
I think, see what it is, when you're designing something for a demographic, I think it is the psychology that you always have to keep in mind is that players will always want to, when it comes to competition, will always want, and especially competitive playing, they do not want to see things that are unexpected, and they will try to find a way to maximize the maybe certain set of things that will definitely trunk truncate any other player's skill set. As you said previously, if you had Guile walking forward doing flash kick, I guarantee you that if there was an Evo and a Guile was like that, you would see in the finals, Guile versus Guile. And it's because you've now created it so that no other character is viable. That's why I think there needs to be patches. And you can only see that when you introduce a product to see how players are going to play with it. And I think you have to buffer that so that it makes things fair in accordance to players using the entire roster. I think that's what it comes down to. Or else you've just created a product, which is, I remember playing Third Strike back in the day in the arcade, and Lichu would be, everybody would be playing and having back and forth until somebody would come in and use Jin, or somebody come in and use Chun-Li.
Chun-Li and Ken.
Yeah, and it was just like, Ken, not so much. I knew how to fight him, actually. But I found like, when you have a character set that is very much so, you can't outpoke Chun-Li. Even when you, and it's like, you'd have to play in a style that was pure risk to make any gains off like a good Chun-Li player. And it became really frustrating because her kit was so dominant that it's almost like she's using one or two moves and you're completely shut down. It's like in boxing, when you're watching a match, you always want to see a good back and forth. When you have a boxing match where one guy's literally throwing a jab and the other guy does not know what to do, and this goes on for 12 rounds, that's not a good fight. That's a very boring spectacle. And I think that's what you're trying to keep in mind, is that the spectacle of the match is what is also important. But then also, I'm a big boxing head, and I remember some other exciting fights were like Arturo Gatti versus Mickey Ward. But those guys never used a jab. Those guys would stand in a phone booth and just throw for the hills. But then people who are boxing purists would look at that and be like, they're not even boxing. They're just slugging it out. There's zero skill. You put those guys against anybody who has actually any skill and they wouldn't even be a match. But pitted against each other, it creates such a crazy complexion because they have such faults, but then they have such grit and heart, and they're willing to take three shots to throw one. And if that one is good, all of a sudden they're throwing more, but then the other person gets hit, and then maybe they slip one and then they throw one back and the other person is hurt. And then all of a sudden they're on a volley and you have these volleys back and forth and the fans are losing their minds. But then also it's if that was a game, it's, wow, why don't you just use your jab and then this guy would be on the outside or something. But it's interesting given what it is, a fight, and that there's real odds on the line. So that's my stance, is that I think balancing is good for players. I remember when I was playing Street Fighter V and I was really into it and they dropped Alex. And I was like, yeah, Alex, it'll be good, because he was like one of the Third Strike characters that I really enjoyed. And I played a lot of Third Strike when I was younger. But then when he came out, it was like, ugh. And I remember even going back and playing Street Fighter IV, and I was really into Dudley. And I think Dudley in Street Fighter III was very strong in his mix-up game. But then when he came to Street Fighter IV, it was like everything that he would throw would trade. So it's like he'd throw like a standing fierce, and in IV it wouldn't trade. It would be like almost a pretty good poke. This one, it would trade with everything. And you're just like, ugh. And after a while, I just feel like maybe you're in this conundrum of, I wanted this to be this, but it's not. And then it's like, you have to come to terms with, let's not. And it's, are you going to continue to play it or are you not going to continue to play it?
Either so, you play with what you're given or move away. You walk away from it, yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like another fighting game, it being Guilty Gear Strive, I feel like, it feels interesting where it's like every character feels OP, but they're also all pretty balanced to a degree.
It's weird because, yeah, like in a vacuum, if everyone's OP, then no one's OP.
Yeah.
But just like all things, there will always be definitive good characters and definitive like really bad characters. But in a game like Guilty Gear Strive, because everyone is OP in some sort of way, it makes for some really imbalanced matchups, though. Like, there are some definite, it feels like, 6-4, 7-3s. Like, a great example is,
what
like,
are the numerical values that you're tying to?
I'm saying, like, if we're, like, playing 10 matches, seven out of three, like, this person's gonna win out of the 10 matches. So, like, a good example could be, like, I think it's, like, relatively, like, a bad match, but it's the ninja Chip versus Potemkin. So dude with the lowest health in the game versus the dude with the highest health in the game. The dude with the lowest health does pretty minuscule damage, but can keep you knocked down on the ground, can't let you really play. The dude with the biggest HP in the game probably needs to touch people maybe once or twice with two combos, and they're dead. When these guys fight each other, it essentially just goes one way. Someone's not getting to play their game. And it's not even, oh, what can do this and you can counter that. It's just, no, that's just the way that the kits are tuned.
Yeah.
They just can't deal with a certain thing like that. They either just don't get hit.
And it definitely plays much more to an extreme, because I guess I think of Snake Eyes. I know he uses Potemkin back in the day, and he's like a very top tier. And I think he was in Street Fighter, he was a very good Zangief player.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure who would use or challenge him with Cliff, right? No, Chip. Sorry. Chip.
If he was playing Cliff, that's a different Guilty Gear.
Older. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely get what you're saying. It is, again, it is that, how do you balance it out, or what can you do to make the game not as one-sided? And I think it's like, you create this character, how do you keep true to the character, but then in the complexion of the game, how do you keep it balanced? So it's like, you do have the player, they feel empowered when it's a striker versus like a grappler, where it's like the striker has to be mindful of the grappler, but then at the same time, the grappler can't overtake. So it's these kind of, that can only be measured, I would say, based off people playing it and actually seeing how the game is being played in the wild, so that you can then make adjustments. So I'm definitely for patches. I think that it's really a good way to keep the game fair and balanced, because you still need to understand how certain players play and how they're pitted up against one another. And again, if you're looking at grand finals of Capcom Cup and everybody's using like the walking flash Guile in the finals, like, that's not a good game, in my opinion. I think you need to have more of a conversation of characters that make an interesting complexion.
That's definitely fair. I'm on that boat of, I like patches, but my caveat is only, I don't like the patch cycles when they're too frequent.
Mm.
Like, I think of games like, was it Justice, or I think it's another Realms usually, but they had a very like quick patch cycle, I remember, for some of like the earlier stuff. And that kind of turned me off from it, because it was just like, you could have played a patch from 2 months ago, and you go back to boot it up, and you're like, nothing feels the same. Nothing hits the same. So having maybe scheduled times in the year, like, I really like the Capcom approach, or specifically like the Street Fighter V approach, where they were like, we do maybe one really giant patch to change things, and then we do small emergency or small patches along the year if we need to really change up the balance. But nothing like huge, just enough to like introduce a character and then tone down some things that we didn't intend.
Yeah,
because that will always happen in video games. People will find a way to play it the way that developers didn't intend, and it's up to developers to either embrace or say, nah, we need to step in.
Yeah. And I think that is definitely, it's, as you said, the intention of how you want the game to be played. And I think that's really important. And I know that some gamers don't want to hear that, because their motive, what they want to play, is they want to win. And it's, if it's taking away from them winning and them dominating, then there is a problem. Then that's when you have the vocal individuals that really complain about things. But the
ones that do, they tend to complain because they want to win playing the way they want to play, not how, whether metas or other people decide how things are going to play. They want to win it in their own way.
Yeah,
I tend to find like those that are like very competitive will just play what is considered great or good at that time. So
yeah,
if this character is considered broken, they're gonna play that character.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where I would say, is it's almost like when you write a book and then you have people that are like, oh, I don't like the ending. And you're just like, you don't like the ending. Why don't you like the ending? Oh, because the ending should be like this. And it's interesting because you're not the author. And that's, I think, what it really comes down to is the respect for, you have to remember that. Even though there's a ton of games out there that people create, there's an intention, there is a way of an idea of how they see what they release into the world be played. And they do keep in mind the audience, but also I think in a way they also have to keep true to their intention of how they want it to be played and how they want to be embraced. And I think that has to be respected. And I know that because now social media is such a large platform, that isn't always the case. They feel like they need to be vocal about it. But then there's a part of me where I think, okay, if you really have a huge problem with it, you have a choice. You can not play it and play another game and get behind that, or you can put your hat in the ring and you could make your own game and you can make something that you release to the world and you can see that engagement in regards to how people receive it. And you can also see the complexity behind what is being played and how it's all put together. And I think that process at times is forgotten. And I think that process really needs to be respected because there's a lot of creative, like, incredibly intelligent individuals that put games together that have gone to school for years and have had a deeply vested interest in developing and creating these things for people to embrace. And I think that when you have an understanding of the skill sets that are involved to do some of the amazing things that are being done, and if you have an inkling of the complexity and the knowledge base that you have to be developing some of those things, you'll have a better understanding of the games that you're getting into. And I think it's not so much like a knee-jerk reaction.
Or appreciation?
I think both. I think it is. I think when you understand, it is appreciated because you realize the amount of time that goes into it and the level of, it's not easy. It's like watching, I think it's like when you're watching like a gymnast, you can see them do flips on a beam. And it's like, okay, if it's so easy, you go and do flips on a beam and you'll realize
how technical. There's,
yeah, how extraordinarily difficult it becomes when you're asked to do like a backflip and land balanced on a beam. And it's not that easy. Like when you're looking at things that are, I would say, of a high level of difficulty that are elite, people can say whatever they want when LeBron James misses a three, when there's two defenders on him and there's 0.7 seconds left on the clock. But the fact that he hit the rim is, I'm just like, wow, he hit the rim. Obviously you want your team to win or whatever, but you're like, wow. Or it's like when you have Joe Montana or Barry Sanders like running through like defenders like they're not there. But then you look at and keep in context how good he actually was to be doing some of the things that he was doing for as long as he was doing it. There's like many factors. There's so many levels of commitment to do something at a very high level that I think things are being delivered at a high level, but I think there is a disconnect with how difficult things are to make consistently at that high level. That being said,
jump,
I guess,
right back in.
Yeah, moving on to the next question. This being a game that we're roughing out mentally, who is your demographic? Who do you want your demographic to be when it comes to the audience that you're trying to reach?
At the end of the day, it always ends up having to be the fighting game community. If I'm going to really narrow this down, it would definitely be for those that enjoyed. I can only think of right now, for some reason, Def Jam.
Mm. Yeah.
Specifically, I guess, Fight for NY. I'd love to build something that has lots of music focus, but then has some fun bombastic combos and stuff. So anyone that enjoys the spectacular, so things that aren't like quote-unquote ground-based footsie, so not a traditional slow game, a Street Fighter, or even let's say like a Tekken, but like I would want it to be something fast, a little bit fast-paced, but have lots of customization, or at least let you feel like you're in whatever mood, or if I'm like saying, oh, I want it to be like really hip hop oriented, I want people like that to feel like they're, oh, I'm getting it. Like, it's a love letter to them, I feel. Like, I don't have a certain, like, I don't have a certain music genre or anything like in my brain right now, but like the idea of having open customization stuff and it being pretty crazy, I feel like that would be a good place. Anyone that's like into that kind of stuff, I feel like would hopefully would want it to look in. But that's where like my audience would be. I don't have an idea of like age, gender, all that, because for the most part, I've seen, at least in my time in the fighting game community, it just seems to be open for anyone. Matter. Then it just, does the idea draw you? Do you want that, to live that kind of like power fantasy, being inserting like XYZ character or even making your own?
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely, yeah, you want to have something that is very far reaching and when it comes to audience, but it is definitely an audience that you are trying to target and hit. And I think it's a fighting game community. It's very specific. Even still, I'll just speak for myself. I have a very particular kind of taste for something that I want to invest a lot of time into. And I think if there are, as you said, like love letter or keynotes of this is the audience that you're trying to reach, there's definitely markers that you can put into the game. And even, yeah, when we were earlier talking about like Street Fighter VI, they have a parry mechanic. They have certain things that are in the game that try to almost harken back to, this is a game that appeals to Street Fighter Third Strike. This is a game that also appeals to Street Fighter IV. This game sort of appeals to certain mechanics in Street Fighter V. There is a wide array of kind of markets that are out there that they're definitely trying to draw in with certain aspects that they're building into the game that they're creating. And it is a very cutting edge look. And even that was like a very, I would say, an outlier for a period of time, because I wasn't really a big fan of the look of Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter 5, though Street Fighter 5 was an improvement. I remember when they were releasing Street Fighter 4 that there was a demo video, which I know that at the time it was, I guess, a hype trailer that wasn't indicative of the gameplay, but they had this really beautiful style. And it was like this ink, and I remember Ryu and Ken were fighting in this field, and there was these like swashes, and it felt like very hand-drawn, and it was like, man, they're creating a completely different rendering approach to make this game. There were so many people I was talking to like in the arcades that were just like, man, that trailer looks absolutely insane. They were so ready for a game to look like that. And in a way, I feel like that trailer is the keystone that is Street Fighter VI. I think it, though it looks visually different, it was a very graphical approach to how, what players and the sensibilities that they thought would fit and be really cool in that trailer. And Street Fighter VI, now that you have these drive mechanics, these crush moves that when they land, it's like there are these beautiful splashes of the kind of like impact, and there's an artistry to the violence, to the gameplay. And it's beautiful. It's wow, man, it's like that power rush that you get. And it's really cool. I think it's, yeah, when we're thinking about like demographic, you definitely want to create something that is drawing in a very interesting, eclectic group of individuals that are invested in what you're producing and not trying to reach out for the layman fan. I think that sometimes can get a little bit, it's almost, oh, if I could teach you how to draw, would you? Or do you just want to see it? And then it's, what about somebody who is stuck on maybe like a specific, oh, I really want to get better at drawing hips. But then you're continually trying to, this is how you draw a head. And it's, I already know how to draw a head. I've been drawing for years. Like, these are my new intricacies of things that I'm having problems with. And I think when you try to fit things too much to a layman, it's like you can miss out on some of the meat, on the continuing conversation of growth and whatnot. Yeah. So this is actually the one part of the podcast that I really like. Because I grew up, and I think it's with a certain expectation when you reach a certain point in the game. And so with all the things that we've talked about, if this is a fighting game and we're coming right down to it, and it is the last boss. In a boss fight, how would you envision the staging, the style, the atmosphere, and the tension of a boss fight that you are encountering?
So this one was actually a fun one for me. I thought of it three different ways, potentially. So my brain was like, if this was like a tournament setting, a la the King of Fighters, Tekken, grand stage, or like, quote unquote, the main boss, ideally for me, would have to be fought an arena in the, whether it's an octagon or something. But because it's all fantastical, I always got to think of everything has to go crazy. Everything has to explode. Boss needs to end up having some overpowered form that makes you go, this dude's cheap, or this person, this thing is cheap. Why would they design it like this? Like, I definitely can consider, have you ever played King of Fighters and fought like Rugal?
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
I could just side cutters in my head.
Yeah.
That is like the level of like dumb or like
it's like guile on steroid uppercut kicks. Yeah,
into the laser eye beam. You're like, why is this?
Or even okay, so I guess Capcom versus SNK2. Like, when you had Akuma and Rugal paired together, and it's oh my word.
I still get chills thinking about when, is it Shin Goki? He just comes through in the lightning.
Yeah.
Just what's happening at the tournament? And he just crashes.
Yeah.
Yes. That kind of.
Yeah. So who would, I guess elaborate if you will.
I kind of want to throw like Volcano High out, because like otherwise it would end up being for me like final boss would have to be one of the substitute. It would have to be, like, maybe the substitute teacher at the end. But if we were just to say it's based in this world, like, of Volcano High, then I would hope that someone near the end would be all crazy powerful and the like. But then I would love them to actually fight near a volcano.
Okay.
Maybe it's dumb and it's cheesy, but I really enjoyed how Tekken 7 did the progression of Heihachi and Kazuya fighting, and it goes from it's unstable near a volcano to like, holy crap, this place is actually erupting. These mad lads are unleashing powers, and just, and I'm like, I would love to have something like that, but maybe like the substitute. And then it'd be fun to have like different environmental effects. So, if let's say your dude is all like water based, then the environment could get cooled down and change with it, depending on things like that. But if we're like only just focusing on Volcano High, but I guess my idea would be then if we're doing like bigger than trying to think of what I think in a boss, like it's funny because I haven't even thought of what the boss would look, because Volcano High, most of like their looks, 2001 is like the all black, that Matrix look. What a 2022 Black Air Force Energy looking boss look like that.
Yeah, or it could be something indicative of like certain elements of, I guess, let's say, so you've gone through this game. There's a part of me that kind of pictures Volcano High just in the, I would say, the arena of something familiar, where I would say Persona, where it's like in this school, you're in this environment, but I wouldn't say the combat is of Persona. But I would say that in regards to, let's say, you're going, doing your side missions, you're learning the story, and then it's like you're going into these certain battles, maybe you're ramped up against certain enemies that have accrued, they've unlocked like a full spectrum of what it is to have the power of the bull, and then you have another person that is a full spectrum of what it is to be the water. And then it's like your wind, and then maybe they also have like wind elements, but it's, they could also have a blend of, let's say, water ox kind of power, where it's like you could have an expose of maybe they catch you in the air, or they, maybe it's a grab, but then where Zangief would pile drive you into the ground. Maybe it's like they would jump up and there'd be like a spire of water erupting up with you. And then it's doing this sort of like spinning pile driver into the ground as well. It's like blending these certain elements together. And the boss might be like a blend of all of these other teachers that you had to fight. And then, but you've also along the way learned how to counter these sort of moves through your own exploration of your character. And then it's like maybe once before when you would get pile drived into the ground, you could then maybe partway through do like a move where it'd be like a hurricane hitting the ground and it would like, you would pause the pile driver, and then you could counter it like a combo breaker and then turn it into kind of you have them in your legs. And as you land, you're landing with your hands down and then you're flipping their body into the ground, causing, it's like you're countering power for power. And it's like you're setting the stage of this guy is, oh, this is just like a regular student. I'm going to completely overpower him with like my moves. But then it's like, whoa, I'm not just like every other person that you faced before. And it's that kind of would set a new, maybe you'd even have a cutscene that would like break the action where the teacher would be like a little bit shook. You'd always have those like shaky anime eyes and maybe he's a little, his hand is on his nose because there's like bleeding. And then he's, oh my God, but you see him engrossed in like a power flame as it's raining and thunder in the background. But then it's as he looks up to you, it's like you're engulfed in like this wind and the none of the water is touching you. And it's like you're not on the ground, you're floating above ground. And it's like you're dispelling all of this water. So it's like that whole visual like framing of, oh shit, I'm unlocked. And you think you're badass, but I'm actually badass. And it's a meeting of equals and not a meeting of I'm not good enough. And I find that to be interesting as well.
I definitely like that harkens back to the movie, like specifically that scene where he freezes, or not freezes, but like uses his power and all the water stops all around him.
Yeah. And I think that would be, it's like he knows something's different. But then it's like he's been so focused on only being powerful and having water where it's like he's completely overlooked like wind. And then maybe he's like, I can't use wind because I haven't unlocked that ability. I've never thought to invest in it. I thought that I could just power trip on these students and they would always fall in line. But it's you're the one that did invest in it and you will not fall in line. So
I'm picturing now, what if the final boss was actually the substitute principal, but he finally unlocks everything. He has to pull a Thanos, I'll do it myself deal.
Yeah.
The ancient scroll.
Or maybe what it is, it's like what happens is you fight and you beat the dude who's wind and bull. But then it's, as you say, there's a progression. So it's like you have this thing and then, this Thanos moment. You're not fighting like Rugal that you just dusted through by the wayside. It's like now all of a sudden Rugal gets possessed or the principal actually lands on top of the other person, completely like obliterating them. They're like, they're not even there anymore. And it's like, you're actually fighting me now. And that would be the counter. And then it's like, whoa, man, do I actually have enough flexibility? And because he knows wind now as well. And then it becomes like a real match. Yeah. I guess in a way, I'm almost picturing like a Power Stone-esque kind of fight, except much more ramped up in a like Dragon Ball Z-esque kind of package.
Like now that I'm like picturing this game, like I could see that. But now my brain's, I would love it to be essentially delinquents or like all the like the troublemakers. Like you could have any different kind, dress them up in the rival schools of, oh, they're part of hockey club or something.
Oh, yeah.
Go like that. But then, like, I do see, like, the crazy, but then it's just, like, I just think now, like, people of authority, so whether it be teachers or principals, headmasters, stuff like that, be fun as, like, boss types. And now I'm just like, oh, this is just Rivals Club.
But still, it's so good. Or it's, remember that movie, have you seen that movie back in the day called The Warriors? Yeah, where it's, like, you're traveling through these different sort of territories, and it's, like, every territory is distinct. You have the orphans, you have the Julies, you have these territories where it's like they're very indicative of these gangs that are willing to present their colors. And that's like a big thing too, where, but it's like your colors are essentially you're of that school, but you're like one and only, and maybe you've modded your character in regards to how they look to fit what you want. So it's like you're not a part, you're a part of the maybe the school, but maybe little bits and pieces of everybody, whereas you're not owned by one part. You're like one of a kind versus like the authoritarian kind of principal, like a power figure. Like that's also like very interesting, very Stone Cold Austin versus Steve McMahon or Vince McMahon. And it's like that whole power dynamic between the two is very interesting and always very, because the one could cheat. Maybe if you're winning, he's like throwing weaker teachers to fight you as he's trying to buy time. So then it's like you have to dispose of these teachers as quick as possible. But then when you dispose of them, they provide power-ups a little bit. So it's like he thinks he's slowing you down, but he's slightly making you stronger on each engagement. But you're wiping out all these like less than sort of teachers. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. I always, the staging of Destiny, where it's like you have the lighting change and like the mood change and you're in this like different arena. But then it's like also with Tekken, as you're saying, it's like you're fighting in this arena, but then it's the environment is changing based on like how you're, where you're fighting and maybe falling through floors. Maybe you're fighting on the top of the school, but then maybe as you're fighting, you fight at the top of the building, but then as you're battling, you fall down through floors and you end up in like the gymnasium. And you fall down through floors and you end up in a different sort of area, and then you fall through floors. And then it's as the battle keeps going crazy, maybe the building collapses and then you're just fighting in like the rubble of school. And it's just, yeah, this absolutely, you know, three or four different like environmental changes and very like almost Dragon Ball-esque, like just pandemonium. You're using like pieces of the building to hit like, or to defend against, but also to use as weapons. It's, yeah, complete craziness. It's craziness.
I feel like that would be one of like the main key things for this game. It just has to be crazy. Don't take it too seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
It needs to just be amp everything up to 11.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, I like that. I love this part of the conversation. So, given the sake we have this completely bonkers game and fighting type, what types of DLC properties would you have as crossovers that you think would help support the narrative or just support like the pandemonium of the game?
So could you expand the DLC properties? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Are you thinking like characters?
Yeah, I'm thinking like maybe characters, maybe costumes. Maybe it's like you have a DLC crossover. Let's say because it's so crazy, maybe it's like you have Neo as a Neo-esque character, because it's very indicative of that maybe era to a degree.
I definitely then would be like, it would be fun if it was specifically like the idea is like delinquents. Love to then be like, let's have delinquents from big IPs or like other fighting games. So it would be fun to get like Daigo and Akira from rival schools, invite the delinquent, maybe like Horowang or something from Tekken 7. Like, just cultivate like who you think is like the most delinquent and bring them in. But if it wasn't that, I think, and it was like focused on the idea of getting, because I liked Volcano High about the fact that there was the hip hop artist as people, it'd be fun to then just contract out, find other people that couldn't make it in terms of like big artists or like fun names, and have them play a very fictionalized version of themselves or a character in general, and have them voice it, amp it up to a million. Like, it'd be fun to have a Little John, but he's not Little John, some dude, but he's screaming like Little John. I think that would be like a fun selling thing.
Yeah. Or even you could have also maybe crossovers with Yakuza-esque like characters. Like, I'm thinking Yamazaki from Capcom versus SNK as well, where it's like you just have this kind of overbearing, very Yakuza-esque bad boy archetype of maybe other kind of like genres that you could tap into. Because I feel like there's a lot of them out there, and yeah, it'd be cool.
I just want all the baddest people to come and just punch.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing too. Maybe it's all just like bad guys. All the villains from other games, maybe all the final bosses from other games.
We call that Mugen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This game's on steroids. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that'd be cool. Definitely. If that was part of it. Yeah, yeah.
definitely, like outside of that, in terms of DLC stuff, it would be cool to have actual community support. So I would think I would love to have what Valve does for their, like, Dota workshops or Team Fortress and, like, Counter-Strike, where, like, the community, like, the modding tools needed or ways to integrate things. So, like, let the community dictate how they want things to look, whether not, like, super wacky, but, you know what, even if it goes super wacky, because let it be, that's what the community wants.
Yeah.
And then let them decide what they would vote for and then put it as DLC, like how Valve does it, because it's almost like the lazy way of developing. It's let the people develop, we'll put it in, and then we'll split profits with them. All we're doing is saying yes, but I really enjoyed that system. I saw a lot of people grow into really great artists, and I think that would be another way that I'd love if I were to do DLC. Make sure that it's community driven and it's indicative to what the community wants.
Yeah. I can get on board with that 1000% as well. Because it will sell itself almost when you have essentially something that is directed by the people that it's trying to reach. It's like they can multiply on top of that. Yeah.
If they wanted a tournament stage, they wanted like banners that are specifically for XYZ tournament, instead of selling it. I like the Capcom approach where like they change it per. But like, I would love to have that kind of stuff where, yeah, this is the DLC, this is the tournament stage, but like you guys can put in, let's say, NPCs, like you can add in your own NPC that you want here via DLC, create a stage or something. But like these are the ones that you want to put in there.
Yeah. No, I think that's cool. Yeah, because it's like they can style it up how they see fit to fit that level of hype that you're trying to like convey. Okay, so given the subject matter of the media, what art style do you feel would fit best?
Probably something stylized, where my brain's at. I'm not saying like it has to be done in like a Guilty Gear, like cel-shaded approach or like that kind of like Dragon Ball, but I find it really tough at least to think about how it would look like if it was done with the most photorealism. Like I feel like there would be a bit of an uncanny valley.
Yeah.
Where you're just, this dude looks hyper real, but then he's just punching through like a building like it's not.
Yeah.
Get away with it for sure, like in cinematic, like stuff like superhero movies. I definitely think like that can like make everyone like big and fantastical. I guess maybe you can get away with it, but I just find that when you put like a stylized lens to it, so whether it's done in that cel shaded or if it's done in like that Street Fighter clay look or whatever have you, that most people can just look at it and just take it at face value, saying, okay, this isn't, it's not real, so I don't have the most real expectations for it. Nothing feels grounded because it doesn't look. Maybe I just...
No, I completely agree. I think when something is just scanned from something that's real, it loses something. I think when there's like a stylization to it, there's an art direction and there's something that is interesting. I think I have the most fun, even though I'm hooked on Last of Us factions. But I remember when I'd go back to play the Street Fighter Alphas, that style, or even Street Fighter Third Strike, when I look at the style of Street Fighter VI in particular, certain things that I'm like, but the overall kind of vibe of it, I'm just like, wow, this is a very beautiful and interesting game. I think when things are paired too much to reality, I feel like there is a level of, I don't know, just a non, like making something that looks real, though it is an achievement, isn't something that is quite as compelling as, let's say, when you're looking at a game that is really art-directed quite well, like Dishonored. When you're looking at Dishonored, you're forced to look at this entire world through a different lens. And you're just like, wow, this game is very beautiful because of how the care that it took the art director to actually art-direct a world. And not just take a bunch of photos or scans and plop them all together, though plopping them all together wouldn't be what they were doing. But I think when you have something that suspends reality, it is much more engaging than something that is just reality verbatim.
Yeah.
So
Is it the, they call it the suspension of disbelief?
It's suspension of disbelief is like when you're engaging with something that obviously it's like,
whoa.
And then this happened in the story, which is totally not realistic, but given the world, you accept it. It's Superman is obviously from Kryptonian. You could just look at that whole thing and just pick it apart completely. But okay. Then it's also, we're just asking you to not. Just accept what's here. We're trying to establish a story. We're just telling a story. Can you suspend your disbelief of an alien that looks human landing on Earth who's allergic to Kryptonian and somehow doesn't go on like a power trip and kills everybody on Earth because we're such a volatile species at times? We're getting to just suspend all those things and believe that this guy's legit, or even Batman. Oh, this guy has like a bunch of money, but it's that's it. And that's what makes him good? No, but
I mean,
then it's like he's...
fair, that is the greatest superpower.
Money?
You got the money you got.
Well, I think you, but it's also like Batman is, it's like he's obsessive compulsive. Yeah, so it's like that. It's to a degree that is extreme. When you look at any hero almost, like Daredevil, dude's blind. But yet he's a gymnast. It's like that contrast. But then you're like, no, wait a minute, he's blind. But it's like he has like crazy bat-like perception. Yeah. And hearing, and it's like he can gauge everything around him. Yeah. And he is forced to adapt at a very high level to everything around him because of his history and like dealing with like criminals. And it's just like he's blind, but it's like he can see better than most people who can see. So it's interesting. There's just different levels of things that you suspend to just go along for the, it's almost like the ticket of admission. You're just, okay, I'll accept it. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. In the spirit of the podcast, what do you feel would push this game so that it's...
It's a fighting no matches are the same, so it's always infinitely replayable.
Okay.
Yes, versing like a CPU gets boring and stuff, and it changes, but as long as you have potentially one other person to play against, there will always be an infinite amount of matches. Yes, there'll be sequences and stuff that might feel familiar. Two matches will ever be the same. I think that ends up being the joy about a lot of fighting games to people. It's always trying to figure out how can I keep bettering myself to know like that there is sometimes an infinite amount of possibility. Really depends on the game you're playing, their strike. But that's like some of the most rewarding and like the most addicting part about it. Just knowing that you can always try something else. You can always learn something else. It's just infinitely replayable.
Yeah. I find, honestly, the one game that I was super hooked on when it came to replayability that I think made it interesting is, and I feel like maybe down the road, this will come into fighting games. And I know that you might be like, but I think that they need to bring physics into fighting games. I remember playing a game called Fight Night Champions. And what made it replayable is they used the measuring of the dynamics of impact. So let's say you're throwing a jab, but then somebody was sprinting or lunging into you, and you threw it in a way that it landed perfectly flush to the person's face. The impact would be almost like being hit with a right hand, but it was a jab. But because of the person was so out of position and so rushed to get in to do what they want to do, that essentially they compromised their defensive responsibility and therefore they got hit really hard and took more damage. And I think if you had that as a metric, because I remember playing Street Fighter 2 back in the day and landing an uppercut on somebody who's on the ground standing in front of you was different than when somebody was jumping into you and was very close and you landed the uppercut. It would take off so much more damage. And I think that would be interesting because I don't know if it was actually measuring. I don't think it was. But I think when you're catching characters off guard, that is something that is much more interesting because the level of damage output is different. And it's if you don't land a jab in the most prime opportunity and for you to hit them with, it doesn't do as much damage. But because it's like it's in a high pressure moment, it was an optimum, them landing like this jab. So it's not going to do as much damage. So the other person could maybe trade with you. And then all of a sudden it's like you lose. And then it's if the person like landed this jab differently, if somehow he was lunging in, it's like there's many more variables in landing shots. And I think when you add physics to a game, it definitely creates some unpredictability, but I think it also creates something that is interestingly replayable in that facet of not knowing exactly how the match is going to go, because fighting games, as they are currently, everything is canned. Everything, like the amount of damage that you land, whether you're roundhousing somebody up close or far away, within distance of connecting, it takes off the same amount of damage. And the reason why is because competitive players want things that are canned. And I think, yeah, and I think like when you have things that aren't canned, you have another metric that you're playing with that makes things a little bit unexpected. And I would say it makes players a little bit more aware of how they're playing.
Do you want to interject though? Because I'm like, what you're describing essentially is almost like Smash, where a lot of the moves have, depending like how the animation comes out and like where they're hit, they have considered sweet spot and like sour spots, depending on how the move hits, where they're traveling. But from what I can recall playing that game and like the people who play competitively, there will always be those people that are like going to grind out to try and hit like the sweet spots and everything.
Yeah.
But the people who are like not even about that will find it very frustrating when they can't get the same. They're looking for that same result. When they're not able to replicate that same result, that's where a big annoyance will end up coming through.
Do you think that it's annoyance because they're not good in landing those spots? But then
it's also the fact that it's a bit RNG in whether or not like you can replicate the same situation, and also just the consistency, I guess. I mean, I know the competitive people enjoy
they would hate chaos.
Think of games like Team Fortress 2 that used to have like random crits, and then when people played it competitively, it was like, turn off the random critical hits.
Yeah,
it needs to be consistent. Then,
yeah,
but I think even at a low level, like when learning something, people enjoy the consistency as well. It, for them, it's like a metric to be like, am I doing the thing correctly? I think a good scenario is like what they did with Street Fighter 6, where like Guile has perfect. So if you do it on the just frame, yeah, he says perfect or like whatever. That gives into the feedback loop of, am I doing the thing correctly? Am I getting consistent at it? You need to see. But like when it's like midway in a fight, like I press a jab and someone ran at me, now I get to do more damage. That's just like, it's a bit tough.
It's, yeah, but I think as well, it's, would that make people more wary of when they're dashing in?
I think there will always be a subset of people that will be mm-hmm. like pretty weird, but there's always going to be the gamers that are like, I just want to play it my way. And if it's,
yeah,
I want to rush down, they will always just run it down.
Yeah. I think, and just looking at it from a game mechanic as well, I always find, I get that it's possible, but in a way, I always find having the ability to just land a jab into the most devastating super that you can to be super, super cheap. I almost feel like it's like, when you think about it, it's like you have to, even in the context of actual fighting, you have to set things up. You have to set it up. And I think that when you land almost like the tiniest, almost like offensive output to land the most maximum damaging output, I think it is like a broken mechanic where it's, if you have somebody who actually has to work, and maybe just you have to land a strong before you land a massive finisher, because it's more, it leaves the character more stunned for you to throw something that's much more powerful. I think is interesting, instead of landing almost like a tiny input and then all of a sudden you're blazing out like a critical art that takes off half your energy when it lands. I think maybe there needs to be like, maybe you can do it, maybe the super comes out, but it's almost like the input that you put in the shot leading up to what the super is, it's like it will only take, it's if you land a fierce and then somehow cancel it into your full super, it'll do a fierce level damage. If you land a jab, it'll do like a jab level damage. I think that would be a nice kind of...
Because I get that, but I'm trying to think of, would if this jab, like if the person was running, you hit them in like the sweet spot and then you did the soup, would it do more damage than your fears?
It's definitely, I guess, the R&D of like how it plays. And I think that's where you have, okay, maybe the jab, if it hits a sweet spot, maybe you can't roll it into the super. Maybe it just, you landed a sweet spot jab. It doesn't roll into a super, but you've stifled, you've landed like a much harder shot. But then let's say you can do a regular super and not like a level 3 super.
Because like without the physics part, like we have a lot of us already in there, whether it be like the counter hit on stuff like that, specifically like anti-airing. So my brain's going like, maybe it's not the physics is the main thing, but maybe it's like more putting emphasis on certain parts of the game, whether it's in the neutral, like with punishing, like maybe it's anti-airing. If people keep jumping, maybe you get more, like you're saying, we incentivize that. If you jump a lot or you try to do things, you just take more damage because that's a part of, or at least one of the mechanics that we're like, we're focusing on. It's not necessarily focused on the physics of things. Oh, just because you're moving fast, that means you take double damage. So I'd be like, I don't know. I'd be like, pretty mad about that. But I think incentivizing current stuff that we have anyway, that would be at least an option. That's where this is at the moment. That's where I could see it. We have games, we can already do some of what you're thinking about.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the final question. Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for recommending Volcano High and having this, putting time aside to have this talk. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was super dope.
I'm super happy you invited me onto this podcast.